So, oddly enough, musical languages are constructed languages based on musical sounds, which tend to incorporate articulation, which apparently I'm not good at doing right now. And unlike tonal languages focused on stress, and whistled languages, which are focused on pitch blends, musical languages distinguish pitches or rhythms. Whistled languages are dependent on an underlying spoken languages and are used in various cultures as a means of communications over distance or as secret codes, because that piercing sound of a whistle, you know, transgresses and confuses. So the mystical concept of a language of the birds tries to connect the two categories. And what I mean by this is, in Abrahamic and European mythology, medieval literature, and occultism, the language of the birds is postulated as a mystical, perfect, divine language, Adamic language, Enochian, angelic language, or a mythical or magical language used by birds to communicate with the initiated. Now, at first glance, you're like, yeah, bake a pie, eat a pie. But I want you to try to understand, when you look at all the other symbology of countries and civilizations, past and present, you know, you've got the thunderbirds, which represent a lot of the Native American tribes, and then you've got the eagle, which is so well represented across the planet with so many countries, right, that it represents, and the phoenix. You've got all these birds representing all of these different Sangre Royales, which was our last podcast we did a couple days ago. You might want to go check that out. So it's kind of interesting when we do these tie-ins, because that's what this podcast is about, right? Connecting the dots. And that might be one reason why birds, not just because of the language, but obviously their perspective over everything, they knew. Anyway, moving on. So the mystical concept of language of the birds tries to connect the two categories, right? So some authors of the musical a priori of languages have speculated about a mystical or primeval origin of the whistled languages. And there are only a few language families as of now, such as the Sorsol language family, the Moss language family, and Nizibuzigu language family. Yes, Nizibuzigu. The Moss is a musical language designed by composer Jackson Moore, by the way, and it has a phonology based on elemental melodic distinctions and a simple lexicon and grammar inspired by pigeons. Moore teaches Moss at Bruce High Quality Foundation University. So there's that. But the Sorsol family is a family of pastorelli languages, usually English, right, where a sequence of seven notes of the Western C major scale or the 12-tone chromatic scale are used as phonemes, right? And so you got the Damalia, you got the Iaia, you got the Sarus, you got the Sorsol, you got the Moss. And then, of course, you got the Nizibuzigu family. Type O negative. That's the word or phrase I was searching for earlier. Sorry about that, folks. Type O negative. And I should have known that because my Native American wife, and yes, I'll go ahead and put that out there, is type O negative. That puts her in a 1 percentile. I'll let that sink in on that. But it always comes down to the royal bloodline and how much royal blood is within the character. Because as, and I'm not saying we buy into the philosophy or anything, but it's written there, and it's written there as a means of telling stories. The fallen angels, right, that blended with the humans. And you hear this over and over again, depending on which culture you look at. So at some point in time, there was some shenanigans going on, and those that feel they are more of their own race as opposed to the blending of what we are now, the Earth Mutt, They feel they are the royal bloodline and the ones that are the keepers of the secrets and the knowledges and all of this stuff. So yada yada yakety yak and all that crap, right? At the end of the day, this goes back to ancient Sumeria, and you've got the King's List. And if you're not familiar with the King's List, go ahead and look up one of my prior episodes, and we do a full segment on the Sumerian King's List. And the royal bloodline transcended from that list into the Egyptian hierarchy and their kings and queens. And then that obviously transcended over into the Roman and the Greeks and so forth and branched out into what we have as the modern Dark Ages and the modern Middle Ages and all of that stuff. Now, what people need to understand is entire countries are named after royal bloodlines. Like when you hear the word Russia, you just think it's a country. But it was named after the House of Rus, right? A royal bloodline. When you hear Saudi Arabia, you just think a country. But that's named after the House of Saud, right? A royal bloodline. So it wasn't just the royal bloodlines in Europe, right? These royal bloodlines were planet-wide. And they go back millennia. And it's these cats who have obfuscated the real history and the truth from the rest of us. And ironically, from themselves even. So that's the sad part. And so it's really up to the true believers and seekers to get back to our real roots of what humanity and mankind really is, what our true purpose is here for, and to avoid the pitfalls of these faux religion / government / fascist corporate entities that want to rule over the masses. And to some extent, they almost have to, because if you leave it to the masses, the term Arkansided was created by the conspiracy theorist, if that's what you want to call them, regarding all the people surrounding the Clinton family who come from Arkansas, their home state, Bill and Hillary Clinton, that have disappeared and have supposedly committed suicide. Now, the rumor on the streets is they didn't really suicide themselves. They Arkansided themselves, hence the term Arkanside. And if anyone's not familiar with Arkansas is, it's spelled Arkansas, if that's what's throwing you off. And it borders down there by the Mississippi River. And it's really well known for its abundance parks and wilderness. And it's a great hideout for CIA and operatives and the Clintons. So this is how the elite keep the best for themselves. But anyway, what we're talking about today is this whole flying with the Eagles. Everybody talking about Epstein and the pedophilia, and I'm not going to get into all that, and I'm not going to talk about my beliefs on that. Everyone's already formulated their beliefs without any facts of evidence. All I can do here today is present facts that are in evidence and has nothing to do with the stuff you're thinking of or talking about. I'm not saying it did or didn't happen. I don't know. I was not there. Hence, I can't talk about it. But what I can talk about is things that there's public record of, that has historical connotations of, that we can physically verify, that you can verify and go, hey, he's bullshitting. Or you can verify and go, wow, this guy's on the up and up. And so that's what we're going to break it down to. And that's what I'm talking about. Birds of a feather flocking together. And that's why it's just innuendo and speculation and hearsay. But everyone's on this big uproar about the Epstein Island, and how many plane trips were taken to Epstein Island. How many plane trips were taken to Epstein Island, and who was on the registry for the plane, and who went to Epstein Island, right? It's like a repetitive mantra. Fine. I get it. Welcome back. All right, guys. So as everyone knows, I don't typically do day-to-day point counterpoint politics and nanny boo-boo type innuendo stuff with talking about this person or that person. That's just not what we're about here. We typically like to connect the bigger picture dots to show, you know, a transformational process that's happened over a long period of time that people may not be aware of because they're too caught up in the moment-to-moment politics. So we step back from that moment-to-moment politics and see the bigger picture. And with that being said, you know, like we're talking about today, we suffered the death of two important people. And one of them was a musician, and the other one was, for lack of a better word, a politician. And reincarnation is the topic of our subject. And you're wondering, well, how does this all this relate? Well, it's interesting because while I don't talk about day-to-day stuff, I do talk about globalism and Prince Philip. Whatever your partisan politics are or not, that's not what this episode's about. So just hold those aside and bear with me on this one and hear it out. But his bloodline, if you follow it back, and you have to go and look all that up. It's connected, well connected with some other family lines. And these family lines are in control of a lot of banking systems. And they blended with the royal line in Britain. And that was the unification with him and Queen Elizabeth II. They have always been on the end of globalist ideology. They get all the reports from all the think tanks. Now, I'm not saying they're leading it or for it or whatever. They're obviously puppets on a string and figureheads. We all know that. Do they have some say in some of the stuff? Obviously. Their families have a lot more say, and it's really the connections within connections. And we'll just leave that there. But what I find interesting is, again, if people know anything about the people that are connected with the Illuminati and all of those things, that those guys revert back to the old ways. They still use magic and they still use numerology. And today's date is a very important date numerologically intended for their purposes. And if you look at some of other high profile deaths that have happened, and if you've been following any of this, you also, if you look at the numbers on those, and I'm not going to go into all that foo-foo stuff here. If you're into that, you can go look it up. I'm just going to state the facts. And without further ado, here are the facts. Prince Philip was 99 years of age when he died. And he died on the 99th day of the year, of the 9th day of the month. Okay, in and of itself, just coincidence, maybe, maybe not, right? I mean, but okay, welcome back to Ideologically Illogical. And we're going to talk today about the energy of crystals and crystal energy. And I know a lot of people relate crystals to healing, but what they may not know is all the other properties that crystals have inherently within them and why they're so valuable to mankind and the human race. So I was asking the last time you guys barbecued or went and grilled out. And the reason I was asking that is, if anyone's ever owned or used a grill starter, and I'm talking about specifically the kind they sell like at a Home Depot or a Lowe's type place. I don't want to advertise for anyone, but you know what I mean. One of those long extended things where you got to squeeze really hard and it does a snap. And then way down at the end, this huge flame pops out. A lot of people used to get them and think it was cool to just use them for regular lighters. But you know what I'm talking about, right? A grill lighter. Anyone ever used them before? Okay, good. So we all know what I'm talking about. The interesting thing about those is what you may not know is the reason it's so hard to pull that trigger back is what you're actually doing, kind of like a pinball machine. You're pulling back and cocking a hammer. And what that does, that hammer, once it's spring-loaded and released, pow, hits a crystal. And if you're not familiar, crystals have stored energy and produce electricity when hit with hammers or when, you know, other outside sources are presented to it. So in this case, it's a pow from a hammer that's pulled back by the trigger that you're pulling on your grill starter. And it snaps. And when it snaps, it sends the hammer flying. The hammer impacts the crystal with such a force that electrical sparks fly out. and then the gas that's released ignites and you have a lighter. This is old ancient technology, folks. This is nothing new. As a matter of fact, lighters were invented before matches. Pens were invented before pencils. In case people don't understand how history really developed and they're confused. So crystals play a part in common everyday things, just like that grill starter that you may not have been familiar with because of its electrical properties. I also asked you guys to tell me what time it was. If you own a quartz watch, then you are using crystal technology. The energy stored inside of a crystal is how that watch is telling time. And it's the frequency rate of that crystal that allows it to be able to tell accurate time. And how long have we had quartz watches ourselves? Now, quartz is nothing new. Crystal is nothing new. And remember, when I say quartz, it's interchangeable with the word crystal. It's the same word. It goes back and it's the same thing. So how far back in time has this technology really existed? So when they show you all these... Okay, so what is exactly transhumanism? A lot of people have been talking about it and people have been asking me about it. Well, very simply, it's when we morph technology with mankind to create a hybrid human. And I know we've seen tons of movies like the X-Men and comic books of sorts and Superman and, even going back to the Bionic Man, right? I mean, the Bionic Man was the original transhumanist exploit. So they've been pushing the globalists their agenda since way back then. But sci-fi aside, let's look at reality. The reality is they have Crimeas. And what these are is they are pigs and cows. They have these over in China and other countries, and you can look this up. Don't take my word for it, please. And they are growing human hearts and human organs and other human body parts, to say the least. There's entire crops of human organs being cultivated and cloned, complete with numerical sequence numbers on them that tell you their identification code, manufacturing number, serial number, and inspection number, and date of manufacture, and everything else. That's transhumanism. That is the future. When you and your wife can walk into a facility and order up your kid a la carte, I want it to have brown hair, black eyes, dark skin, you know, big feet, small hands, right? Whatever you want, whatever your heart's desire, you dream it up, you walk in, you order it like the way you would order a hamburger. And no problem, you're going to be on the social credit system and your health will all be taken care of by Big Brother. You need a new heart, no problem. They've got one growing in a pig waiting on you. You need a new lung down the line, no problem. They've got one waiting on you. But here's where there is a problem. So when you were a little kid, did your parents make you do something over and over again, practice something, whether it be a musical instrument or sports or reading or something, and you had to do it repetitively and over again to get better at it, of course. Does this sound familiar to you? Something that you remember doing as a child, whether it be math or English? Do you remember taking spelling bees with your siblings and trying to learn things? Repetitiveness, right? Repetition is the mother of all learning. So, where am I going with this? Well, obviously, if you have the ability to do something over and over and over again until you get it right, kind of think of it like the movie Groundhog Day and subsequently all the ripoff movies that have come after it, because that is essentially what you are left with. You're left with a paradigm where the world seems to not change, almost as if you're in a video game, stuck on a level. And until you get that one little thing right, you cannot advance to the next level. And this is the metaphor that they're putting out there. This is the symbology that they want us to learn, absorb. Why would that be? Because somebody somewhere already grabbed a time machine and figured it out. And it's nothing more than wave theory, electromagnetic theory, and frequency exchange, as we are all nothing but energy. And this entire existence is nothing but an energy waveform. The fact that we perceive it the way we do, that's a whole nother story, and we'll get into that in a moment. But first, let's get back to the waveforms. As everyone remembers, there was this huge dispute with Tesla and Edison. And that all got figured out, and they went their separate ways. You know, Tesla actually worked for Edison, but Edison was very shrewd, and he was very good at harnessing his workers' ideas and then taking them for himself. Tesla was not the only one he did this for. As a matter of fact, Thomas Edison didn't really invent anything. Almost everything that he is acclaimed of inventing, he actually bought or, you know, had done at his factories or paid someone to do for him. In other words, it wasn't his brain. He was just the brain behind getting the brains to work, which is a great thing, don't get me wrong. But Tesla, on the other hand, did not want his intellectual property stolen, and he fought back. You know, our founding fathers, the American framers of the Constitution, the amendments, the Bill of Rights, they warned us so long ago when they framed this out that that would be the one way that America could be taken down, was by initiating parties. The founding fathers were against party system. This is why they had it set up with representative members for the Senate and the House. And that's why the members were chosen very carefully in those amounts, and why there was only one president, one vice president, and so on and so on. It's because of how they allocated the power structure. And they knew the way the game, the system, the way to change it, the way to monopolize it, would be to create a party system and then ultimately split that party in two. So you're controlling both sides of the same coin. Right? Remember, when you have a coin and you flip it, you're either heads or tails, but to the coin, it's no different. It's the same coin. And that's politics for you in a nutshell. They don't really care which way you go. If you go Democrat or Republican, they're going to win either way because they're both sides of that same coin. Which is why it makes no sense to keep voting Republican or Democrat. Democrat or Republican. That's the essence of insanity. What our founding fathers wanted was sentient human beings in there, listening to the ideas brought forth by other sentient human beings, and everybody making wise and informed decisions and discussing things openly with in open forum, not necessarily a debate. Debates did happen, but that's not what they were there to do. They were there to work out solutions to the people at whole problems. And that is, I think, something that has been long gone and forgotten. Now it's a power grab between two factions or three or four factions that are continuously trying to overtake each party. So, you know, the parties themselves, think of it like a virus. You have your computer that says one name on the outside, and you look at it, and everyone looks at it, and it just looks like a regular computer. And when you buy it, it's just you that has the ownership to it, and you're the one programming it. But then someone hacks it, and now they're doing stuff with it. It's no longer you. But to someone just looking at it, it still looks like the same apparatus. It didn't change. But the person behind it controlling it did. Welcome back. And today we're discussing chimeras and how they affect us and why it affects you and why it's important. Now, first off, let's define what a chimera is and how and what area it is. Okay, so specifically it's genetics. Let's just cut to the chase. Genetics is where we're going to deal with chimeras. And oddly enough, when it comes to COVID, that's also genetics. So I just want you to file that in the back of your head for right now, and we'll jump back to that later. But right now, back to chimeras and the genetics of it. So a genetic chimerism or chimera is a single organism composed of cells with more than one distinct genotype. So in animals, this means that like an individual derived from two or more zygotes, which include possessing blood cells of different blood types, subtle variations in form, you know, the phenotypes. And if the zygotes were of differing sexes than even the possession of both female and male sex organs. And this is just one of many different phenomena that may result in intersexuality. Animal chimeras are produced by the merger of multiple fertilized eggs. In plant chimeras, however, the distinct types of tissue may originate from the same zygote. And the difference is often due to mutation, you know, variation, during ordinary cell division. Normally, genetic chimerism is not visible on casual inspection. However, it has been detected in the course of proving parentage. And we'll get to all that in a minute and what all that means. Another way that chimerism can occur in animals is by organ transplantation, giving one individual tissues that develop from a different genome. For example, transplantation of bone marrow often determines the recipient's ensuing blood type. And the reason all this is fascinating is because how they're using it and the promise that it has. So what they've been doing is creating these human pig hybrids. I shit you not. Yeah, I don't mean to cuss there, but when I first found out about these, you know, ages ago, 10 years ago, it seems like, probably more than that, probably like 15 to 20, but I'd never believed it. And here we are today, and it's still pretty much, it's not like it's a secret. It's just, it's not really spoken about. But I'm looking right now at a human pig embryo hybrid created in a lab, and here's the facts. And this is from National Geographic, and it's at nationalgeographic.com/science/article/human-pig-hybrid-embryo-chimera-organs-health-science. And that's where you'll find this article.